that should remain an element of this legislation. I would just echo Mr. Young's statements. They do right now conduct very extensive audits of self-insured employers. They are very thorough. We've had some negotiations with the department on this subject before. They are examined really very closely right now. There are only 149 self-insured employers. I'd like to see more in the state of Oregon. I don't think it would be an unmanageable burden, again, not being in the department, I can't say for certain, to expand that a little bit. And I'm not sure every self-insured employer would necessarily take advantage of this bill. They may just be very happy with the service company they have now and stick with it.
Right now, they have the ability to fire their service contractor and move.
Occasionally, especially with the public entities, you'll actually see a bid process.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Further questions of Mr. Douglas?
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hayden.
Rob, you've heard Larry testify as to the potential increased administrative costs in doing this. Do you have any ballpark long shot opinion as to whether it might minimally reduce the overall cost of the entire program?
Well, Representative Hayden, it's certainly our hope that it would be a cost savings to the employers who self-insure and be cost savings to employers who do not self-insure. We were talking earlier in the audience about putting together some numbers just for self-insured employers to try and show you what we think that range would be. I can't speak to the department's administrative expense.
One final question, Mr. Douglas. When it could be one of your folks, it could be a private carrier, assigns their work to a service company, does that mean everything goes to that service company? Talking loss control, we've talked about claims handling here, but there are a lot of other functions that an insurer typically does the service company do all of that? And what's does the self-insured employer reserve anything?
Mr. Chairman, very frankly, that really varies employer to employer. Some employers keep very, very close contact with their service company and try and do a greater percentage of those tasks in-house, work very closely with the service committee company and demand certain types of services from that service company. Other employers have a little different attitude and feel that's not their business, that's not what they do best, and they give the service company much more leeway.
Okay, so by contract you would decide who's going to do what?
Right.
Okay. So I had. Anybody else for Mr. Douglas? Thank you.
Thank you.
We had one more person signed up to testify, Mr. Moore.
Thank you. My name is Robert Moore. I represent the Oregon Workers' Compensation Attorneys. And my clients are very interested in competition and see it as a very valuable thing and believe it would probably be useful here as well. We think the matter of improving service, let me just stay with the competition. Some employers that I'm aware of are retaining their own risk management or not service companies, but just watchdogs on their insurers to make sure that their insurers are providing service, because to provide better service does keep your comp costs down. At least it keeps your claims down. And we're very interested in improving service from carriers because from our experience, bad claim service is a principal driver of litigation costs and a less significant driver of health care costs. We think the Oregon location is probably very important, but more important than an Oregon location is that there must be some exact place that you can find out where is this claim going to be taken care of, so that everybody, the insured employer, the worker, the providers, and you know how long that list is. All of those people need to be able to say, this is an injured worker. This is the address of his claims service people, and get it immediately and accurately. And I was just doing some notes on my cuff out here. You're looking at a database located someplace of 500,000 workers that I would think your update, your daily update would be between 1,000 and 2,000 queries per day. There are larger databases than that in the state, but that's a good-sized database. And I think what Mr. Young is saying is that that's going to cost you some money to have that database service available to administration, to employers, to injured workers, and to providers. So there's, I think that the that Mr. Scherer's notion of competition is a very good one, but Mr. Young is probably correct too. That it's going to be expensive.
Mr. Dominey.
As Representative Edmondson pointed out earlier, the PLOs, give you the credit, I don't want to get caught with plagiarism.
He starts wearing one of those burnouses, I think we're all in trouble.
Do you see any additional cost on the part of an attorney if instead of having two or three different places that they go to look in working on a workers' comp, if now you ended up with 300 or 400 places, would there be an additional cost in an attorney?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Downey, there could be if you didn't know exactly where to find out the address or the phone. If you didn't know exactly, there certainly would be a very large increase in cost. And it's a cost that you don't, it's not easily... Well, you don't think about it. You think, well, I'll just make a phone call. But a phone call costs $2-3. When you finally make the contact and the hours to do it, even if it's being done by a clerk. And if you don't know exactly where to make the first phone call to, then the cost goes up even more. So you're really biting off a lot of uncertainty.
Go ahead,
just as a follow-up, so in order to keep that cost down, from your perception, I would assume that you'd want to keep all of them in Oregon, the discussion that we've had about keeping it within Oregon, because I can see the cost if you had to call New York every time to find out where to start the process would add money to the total bill. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Representative Mannix.
Thank you. In that regard, when you're talking about tracking down information, as a practical matter, don't the attorneys have their workers bring in that Form 801 and all the other documents so that they would have on there the information as to who to contact?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's correct if the information is correct. I think the point that Mr. Young was making was that the bill, as it's set up, does not ensure that you're always going to know the right first place to make a phone call, and that if that's taken care of, so that there's always one place to start, and that the list of checking is not going to be too long, then everybody who wants to know who to deal with, how to deal with the insurance company, will be able to make those decisions quickly. The cost won't be excessive.
Follow up, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman. Well, when we're dealing with the Safe Corporation, they've got offices all over the state. And you call Safe, and they can refer you to where you have to be referred. But they have a central address, don't they?
Yes. I believe that's correct. I'm not sure.
And what Representative Dominey was getting at is if you had an Oregon address or a central information source, couldn't you just require that every processor or carrier have one central information number that anybody could call first, and just as they could call Safe or Liberty Northwest or Fredis James, and that the entity would simply be required to be able to immediately direct you to whoever you're supposed to contact, so you've got one, maybe two calls?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you could require, and that's what we're suggesting there.
Fine. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Moore? Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we adjourn, I'm just for my own, Mr. Scherer, could you call? I had a couple follow-up questions. I would point, I don't know corporate law, but line 17, I noticed that it says each service company is incorporated in or authorized to do business in this state, and I don't know if that means they can still operate in New York City or not, but the current law already says that they are incorporated and authorized, so we shouldn't have somebody we've never heard of anyway, corporation division. To my questions to you, Mr. Shearer, I'm just want to know some about common practice in your industry. Mr. Young spoke to unlimited number of locations. Do your, not your company, but do service companies in general have multiple locations
well,
in Oregon?
Mr. Chairman, our company is a brokerage firm. We broker insurance, and we also have a service arm where we service self-insured clients. There are service companies in Oregon, companies like Crawford & Company, Underwriters Adjusting Company, national companies that may have service locales in half a dozen cities in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Our particular firm has two or three offices in Oregon. We service claims out of one central office in Oregon.
Okay. So even if they had five or six, apparently, though, they would still be legal because I think it's, as was testified, you can have up to six locations.
Right.
To service claims.
Yes.
Okay. What about direct regulation? It was mentioned a couple times. Of course, we don't license claims handlers in this state anyway, but I'm not too sure it's not a bad idea. But could you speak to that issue of your performance as a service, not your company, but service companies in general as to the regulation, et cetera, of these people? Do they... I'm assuming there must be some type of regulation.
Well, I think the current regulations require some verifiable claims expertise with respect to the administrative rules. Mr. Young might have the rules right before him. I don't, but I believe that the current regulations speak to two or three years of verifiable claims management experience. I frankly think that the element of competition, like in any field, people who are doing a good job will find that customers will come flocking to them.
Okay.
The current situation, Oregon is such a unique jurisdiction that even from a service company standpoint, there tends to be one or two service companies that have secured a great deal of the business through a high level of service.
Mm-hmm. But Max and I here, we couldn't start one of these up very easily then. You know,
Mr. Chairman, I don't know what kind of experience he has, but I don't think that there's enough.
No,
not right now. I can't see just going willy-nilly 10,000 service companies being started. This is extraordinary complex business we're involved in. Very complex, even the computerization. I think somebody brought up the question about computerization. That's a very integral part of establishing a service company, and that can go a long ways in easing the administrative burden that we're concerned about. And as we mentioned earlier, this is permitted universally in all but, I think, three jurisdictions,
mm-hmm.
and things seem to be working pretty well in those jurisdictions. I would say that the rate of increase in workers' compensation costs just about anywhere else in the country, maybe but for the state of Maine, over the last 7 or 8 years has been far less than it has in the state of Oregon.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Mr. Douglas. Maybe you're in a better position. When we use your company's example, you do claims handling, do you do loss control? The other associated, again, we've mm-hmm. talked only about claims handling here this morning, and of course, we know there's a lot more to workers' comp than just processing the claim and touching the files. Book rehab, legal. You got the legal section to deal with. It's typical for the service companies to, at least, apparently even if the employer or insurer doesn't ask you to do it, but you do have capabilities to do that type of stuff.
Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, I think that service companies as a whole pretty much provide claims management services to varying degrees. They may or may not provide loss control services or vocational rehabilitation services. It varies from service company to service company. It varies from insurer to insurer. Mm-hmm. I think the self-insureds have been able to enjoy a great deal of the success they have because they can pick and choose and unbundle those services, select from the best, so to speak.
Any further questions? Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Well, before we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2348, we'll get with Mr. Young and those interested parties on perhaps looking at some possible changes to allay some of their fears and see what the committee wants to do. Before we leave, however, I had another LC draft. I didn't know who the sponsor was this morning. I found out who it was. So if you'll bear with me, we'll introduce one more LC draft. This is LC 2609, authorizes extension of normal eligibility period for unemployment compensation benefits for certain individuals who incurred illness or injury compensable under workers' compensation law. And that's at the request of the Associated Western Pulp and Paper Workers. Okay, Representative Johnson moves LC 2609 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any objection? So moved.
Mr. Chairman,
while
we still have a quarter in view of our Watergate type tape problems this morning, it was impossible to vote on one bill. May I vote at this time, please, on 2609?
Sure. Representative, let me get the bill number.
2036.
Representative Hayden asks unanimous consent that he be allowed to vote on House Bill 2036 as amended. Representative Hayden, is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved. Representative Hayden
votes aye.
Representative Hayden votes aye. House Bill 2036. We are adjourned.